from KQED.
Hey everyone, I'm Emmanuel.
I'm Carly.
And I'm Jamedra.
And we're the hosts of
The Cooler.
On this episode, we're going to be tackling all the headlines we didn't get to over the summer and getting into some impeachment drama from 1860.
And we're also going to be talking about the invisible Hollywood machinery that makes us think the return of Brad Pitt is a good thing.
And I'll explain how a late night PSA reminded me that we don't have to be our parents.
We are back for a fifth year. Can you believe?
Yes! Yes, Gaga! Oh my God, yes!
So, listeners, this season's going to be a little bit different. As a reward for paying your rent on time, every first of the month, you'll get a brand spanking new, fully loaded, longer than usual episode of The Cooler. Mm-hmm. It's the same podcast that you've loved for 4 years, but now it's monthly because turns out bi-coastal LDR relationships aren't easy or cheap.
It's the Cooler XXL, yeah. If you will.
We supersized, yes?
Yes.
Why not?
So while we're breaking news, I want to hear news from you guys. How was your summer? What did y'all do? Who'd you see? What swimwear did you debut? Those are people want to know.
Okay, so I did something that I've wanted to do for a long time, and it has been a cheesy fantasy bucket list thing of mine. And
hello.
I went on a cruise ship.
Oh my God, yes.
I went on a cruise ship, and I did only one of those little like 3-day turnaround cruise ships because I wanted to see if I could tolerate it, like if it was my thing. After you're on the ship for like within the first 24 hours, they have to do the security briefing with you. They have to gather everyone from all corners of the ship. And I'm talking about there's almost 2,000 people on this floating city that's 11 stories high. And it's kind of crazy because then you look around and you're like, trapped on the boat with these people for the next few days. I don't know if I want to die next to you, sir.
I mean, that's roughly the amount of people that were on the Titanic.
And my kids kept bringing up the Titanic. As we were boarding the ship, during the security briefing, at the pool, on the deck, everywhere, they thought it was appropriate to talk about the Titanic. We had to have a conversation about that a few times.
I was going to ask if the security personnel mentioned that doors can accommodate 2 people, not just one.
Listen.
As seen on Titanic.
Okay, come on, Rose.
Yeah, get it together.
I mean, a frightening number of people disappear from cruise ships. I hope you know that.
I do. Oh, one disappeared right before we went on the cruise.
What?
Yeah, a child, a small child.
Oh, that's not funny.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I'm glad you survived your summer and the cruise ship. Carly, what did you get up to this summer?
I went to New Orleans twice, which was incredible. I now want to live there just to further complicate this bi-coastal arrangement. And I went to Spain and Italy, and it was incredible. It turns out I'm not as good at Italian as I recalled.
Ooh.
So my feeble attempts at really rudimentary ordering in restaurants kind of went badly. One thing I learned, because we're creatures of habit and we go back to the same restaurants a lot, if we find somewhere that we like on vacation, I learned the Italian for "we're back."
Exactly.
So I could proclaim that at the door. And in case you're interested, that is "siamo tornati."
And that actually works for this episode. We're back. So you were basically just like running around saying things like "prego, raviolis," and then that
si,
was it.
Si.
That would be me.
Yes.
Yikes.
Emmanuel, tell us, how about you? Oh, wait, you moved to New York.
Yeah,
I haven't been up to much, you know, just moving thousands of miles across the country with all my belongings and no job or apartment lined up. It's no big deal. So after being here in New York for a few days, I immediately switched to "where are the celebrities? Where are they?" Come on, Cosmos, at least give me a Real Housewife or something. It doesn't even need to be Bethany. I'll take like a Tinsley Mortimer or Heather Thompson.
Just someone,
I
anyone.
Am flexible.
You'll scrape that barrel.
Yeah, but the Cosmos left me on read for quite some time. Until I was minding my own business and I ran into none other than Kimberly Mother Effing Kardashian.
Oh, the stars align.
The
Kim. So she like didn't almost mow me down with her Mini Cooper while drunk driving like Lindsay Lohan did in Greece that 1 year?
I thought that was a golf cart.
No, it was a Mini Cooper.
Oh, amazing how you kind of change stories in your memory to make them better. In
Way
my mind,
to disparage
Lindsay,
the Mini Cooper brand.
Seriously, I had the whole, if someone had asked me, like, say if you passed away, sorry, and I had to like read the story at your eulogy, I would say, and of course, the best story that we know from Emmanuel is that Lindsay Lohan careened down a hill in, was it Zakynthos? Mykonos. In a golf cart.
Emmanuel would sit up out of the coffin and correct you. He'd be like, excuse me. I cannot rest in peace.
The most.
It was a Mini Cooper Sport. How dare you? I was not taken out by a golf cart.
But yes, continue.
Well, some other things that I did. I went to a live taping of The View yesterday for my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. Dreams come true.
Okay, Dish.
I also went to a Downton Abbey premiere where all the stars were.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun.
Okay, so how are you getting more? Like, I'm sorry. California is the coast with the celebrities and the stars. How are you doing more star-studded things in New York than here?
You would be surprised how much you can, like, seek out celebrities when you don't have a job.
Yeah. Time on your hands. Question, though, do you have any intention of going to Justin Theroux's newly opened dive bar?
Wait a minute, what?
I'm just finding out about this, and I will go and report back.
Please do, because I'm obsessed with Justin Theroux and the level of his posership on specifically Instagram. And so he's joined forces with some other posy man and opened a dive bar, I think like on the Lower East Side or something, and it just looks like the worst thing in the world. So please go, Emmanuel.
Is that Jennifer Aniston's ex?
It is.
Okay, so the Jennifer Aniston rule is that we only refer to men via their proximity to women. So Jennifer Aniston's ex is opening a dive bar.
I have forgotten.
In New York. I'm just throwing that out.
Do you know that Jennifer Aniston's other ex still makes movies?
That guy. We're going to get to that.
And lastly, I am fulfilling a New Year's resolution that Jamidra and I went in on together back in January.
I've been failing.
Sure, remember.
I do. And I don't remember because I'm not doing it. But
I enrolled in a Spanish class.
Yes.
With all my free time. Jamidra, ¿estás estudiando español también?
Nope.
Or no?
Nope.
Okay.
I need to set my game up.
Didn't even say no in Spanish. Can I just point that out?
So here's my goal. My goal is for us, before the end of the year, before the last episode this year, you and I will do at least some portion of a segment for this podcast in español.
What?
Can we put that out there? The gauntlet has been thrown.
Estoy listo, which means I'm ready. Bring it.
You have been learning Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'll get an app.
So you can go. It's great.
Can I say also before we pivot, Emmanuel, I have imagined you when you touched down in New York doing the Laverne and Shirley twirl in the middle of the street and letting everyone know that you're going to make it after all.
It was more Felicity. you know, somber, emotional, slow-mo walking with like my curls bouncing in slow-mo as well through the city streets.
I got to say, I was thinking more Coyote Ugly.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay,
like
you
go to the nearest
to that
bar.
That's better.
Adrian Grenier is there. And you sing Can't Fight the Moonlight.
Amazing. Leanne Rimes' impact. Okay, a lot happened in the world of pop culture since our last episode, so it seems only right that we weigh in on the biggest stories of the summer in a segment I'm calling Since We've Been Gone. The whole country spent much of August sharply divided over a contentious political issue, whether Chick-fil-A, Popeyes, or Wendy's had the best chicken sandwich.
Jesus. Oh, yes.
Yeah. As someone who doesn't eat meat, I don't really have much to say about this hubbub, but I'm curious if either of you tasted any of these sandwiches, if you picked a team, or if you just don't care.
Here's what I say. As a Black person, I am not about to be on Twitter arguing about chicken. I was like, I will, as Eliza said in Hamilton, I will exclude myself from the narrative. I excluded myself from the narrative. It was absolutely ridiculous, so I don't have a favorite. I'm not weighing in about anything, and I just hope that everybody is as enthusiastic when November rolls around. November 2020.
Eyes on the prize, guys. So. I mean, the apex of ridiculousness for me was reached when Popeyes were offering, whether this was actually true or not, offering that people could come in with their own bread and just buy the chicken fillets. Put them between the bread. I have not had the Popeye sandwich. I have never been in a Wendy's. And for reasons that we're not going to go into, I will never set foot in a Chick-fil-A.
You're just that mad that they are closed on Sundays and gay people.
Exactly. Mainly the latter thing.
So as pop culture experts, none of us participated in one of the biggest pop culture moments over the summer.
Also, man, you know what? I just don't like sandwiches. Girl, just say you like bread. You love bread. You like bread with things in it. Oh, God.
Just like Oprah. She loves bread.
Does she?
She does.
Interesting.
You've never seen that?
No. Meme where she just screams, I love bread over and over.
This is the joy for me. I love bread. I love bread. I don't deny myself bread. I have bread every day. Every single day.
Okay. Cue the sad, abused puppy Sarah McLachlan song. because we have to lay to rest our crushes on a certain Canadian gentleman, Justin Trudeau, Canadian Prime Minister.
God, I hope we won't get too many photos.
Photos recently surfaced of him attending an Arabian Nights party back in 2001 in complete blackface. And when I first saw the photo, I don't know about you guys, but I like didn't see him initially because he's so dark. He blends in with the background.
We could say one thing we can say about it, though. He committed.
He did the hands.
It wasn't just blackface. It was hand. It was leg. Like, he committed with the makeup.
Like, at no point during that prep process did he think, should I be doing this? Like, that looks like an hour and a half. Yeah.
Did you hear his explanation, though?
Dressed up in an Aladdin costume and put makeup on. It was something that I didn't think was racist at the time, but now I recognize it was something racist to do.
I mean, I will say, as apologies go, it was better than most that I've seen in recent years. He acknowledged that it was out of pocket, and basically he did the politician thing, which is he's evolved over time. Mm. But he didn't try to defend it. He didn't try to say it didn't happen. You know, he didn't try to, like, wash it away. He acknowledged that he was ignorant. You know, what do you do if you are a political figure and you know you've done something stupid like that in the past?
I often wonder about
that. Like, do you just disclose it up front, or do you have your team leak it and then you're prepared to, like, you know, address it in like a graceful way? But you know you did it, and eventually it's going to come out. So how do you?
It's funny. I've been thinking a lot about this with regard to the Jonathan Van Ness interview that he gave to the New York Times, where he reveals like his HIV status and elements from his past. And there's so much about this interview that is incredible and courageous. But what really stuck in my mind was, my God, to have lived with knowing this for years and years and thinking at any point someone could come forward or send a tweet being like, hey, do you know what I have on this guy? Do you know what I know about this guy? And obviously, I'm not equating what Justin Trudeau did and Jonathan Van Ness's past at all. But just the idea that you live with a secret for years and years and think this could blow up at any moment. Time. I don't know what the official advice for that is.
I should say also, Jonathan Van Ness is a friend of the show. And if you're new to the podcast, you should go back and listen to the episode because it was fabulous.
Something weird about the Trudeau thing as well is that a lot of people were reacting with, well, he was young and he didn't know better. He was 29 going on 30 when that photo was taken, and it was taken at a high school, but he was the teacher.
Yeah. Oh my. That's the part that got me. I was like, okay, high school. He was in high school. And they were like, no, he was a member of the faculty.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just a reminder that even outwardly progressive people that we might thirst over are casually racist. Yeah. Hopefully they want to do better. It seems like he does, but looks bad. And it's also a reminder that white men are always afforded boyhood for as long as it serves them, while black boys are considered threats before they even hit their teen years. So keep that in mind.
And then watch the documentary When They See Us. Emmy winning. Just watch it. And then that sort of like double downs on Emmanuel's point.
Speaking of white people. Every time there's a casting call for an Asian lead in a film, a voice erupts saying, I volunteer as tribute. You know who that voice belongs to. Okay. It belongs to none other than Scarlett Johansson, who's stepped in it more than a few times for doubling down on taking roles from people of color, trans people, and saying that actors should be able to play anything, even trees. She wants to be like cast in the new Giving Tree or something. I don't know what she's after. On top of that, last month, she decided to let us know that she thinks Dylan Farrow is lying about being abused by her father, Woody Allen.
Wow.
Scarlett said, quote, I love Woody. He maintains his innocence, and I believe him and would work with him any time. And to that I say, we get it, Scarlett. You want to play Sun Yi in the biopic.
Oof.
Don't be so desperate about it. And moving on.
Wow.
Over the summer, I'm sad to say that the record for most weeks at number one, which was held for decades by Mariah and Boyz II Men's One Sweet Day, has been broken by the song that won't let me have a moment's peace, Old Town Road.
You think you got it. My kids won't like stop it. Singing the song.
It's not my favorite song, but I don't have to love the song to respect what Lil Nas X has done. It's pretty impressive. And he also did the super brave thing of coming out while he was on top of his game and he had so much to lose. I'm sure that experience would have lended itself to a really meaningful interview with a well-meaning interviewer. But instead, Lil Nas X had to talk about his coming out experience on HBO's The Shop Uninterrupted in front of Kevin Hart, who, as we've talked about on the show a couple months ago, gave up hosting the Oscars over refusing to apologize for homophobic comments he made. So let's listen to how that whole thing with Lil Nas X and Kevin Hart in this interview played out.
He said he was gay, so what?
It's not that like it's like being forced. It's just like knowing like growing up, like I'm growing up to hate this shit. I'm not supposed to
Growing up, hey, what?
Homosexuality, gay people. Come on now.
Why are you going to?
If you're really from the hood, you know.
Don't be obtuse. I felt like that was a pretty aggressive way to respond, and for them to say, why did you feel like you had to say it, and for them to pretend like they're in the African American and Black community, there's not sort of like stereotypes around being gay. Like, come on, dude. Come on.
Yeah, unless we forget that, so what? You're gay was not how Kevin Hart said he would respond if his child came out.
I remember having
to do with blunt force trauma, if I remember correctly.
The tragic thing is that that's been like such a stock quote-unquote joke like for comedians for decades. That kind of like, if I found out my kid was gay, I'd do X, Y, and Z, kind of trading off the disappointment that they would allegedly feel. It was gross.
So I will say, I think Kevin Hart had an opportunity there to use it as a teachable moment and really talk about his own personal growth. It's disappointing that he chose not to.
And it feels very gaslighty and dismissive to pretend that homophobia doesn't exist when you were embroiled in a homophobic snafu just mere months ago. It feels like when people say, I don't see color, it's like, oh, I don't see gayness. Like, it's not a big deal. Who cares? And yeah, it was just a lot. So shout out to Lil Nas X for surviving that situation.
Yeah, and he's also the best person to follow on Twitter ever.
Mm-hmm. Let's remind everyone, how old is this kid? He's like
nine.
Yeah,
he's
so young.
He's great.
So he's got, I mean, and at this age, he's already so courageous. Like, I'm excited to see what he's going to do next.
The kids are all right, guys.
On the opposite spectrum of childhood is our last headline. I saw that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was trending again this summer and it paralyzed me and countless others, I'm sure, with fear and dread. But I'm happy to report that she is still alive and well. But the same can't be said for some of her enemies. Let's listen to a recent interview Ruth Bader Ginsburg gave to NPR on the topic.
There was a senator, I think it was after the pancreatic cancer, who announced with great glee that I was going to be dead within 6 months. That senator, whose name I've forgotten, is now himself dead. And I am very much alive.
The shade like in her. The shade in her not even being able to recall his name in death is like the extra.
We
that
don't
is
know
just,
her. Can I just shout out Nina Totenberg of NPR just giggling in the background?
That's a chef's kiss.
How could you not?
Yeah.
You know,
she's a legend.
Taking the high road all the time is exhausting. And if someone publicly declares that you're going to be dead in a little while with a tone that kind of insinuates that they're looking forward to that day, I say unleash on them when they die.
Mm-hmm.
She deserved that glee.
Yeah,
glee
regardless of your political stripes, I think we can all agree with that.
She makes me want to be more civically engaged. She also makes me want to do more push-ups and outlive all of my nemesis.
I always am like, I don't want to outlive too many people. Like, I want my life to come to like a fruitful conclusion. But now I realize that fruitful conclusion is outliving everyone who hates me. So
the best revenge, living well.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed living. Folks, doesn't it feel like 1999? Again, think about it, right? Presidential impeachment, a big royal wedding, and Brad Pitt once again apparently being the biggest movie star in the world.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the cherry, I guess.
Fight Club was 1999. That was when he was riding so high. And now he's back.
He's having a bit of a moment.
He's got Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Have you guys seen that?
I have.
I have not. Was it good?
It's really good.
Yeah, it is.
I've heard it described most accurately as a good hang. Like, it's a great time in the movie theater. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. There's some things I really dislike about it, but it's a good hang. He's also got this movie, Ad Astra. Let's just say that a lot of people really like this movie, which might actually be contrary to how I feel about this movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's a gigantic scam and a con.
Ooh.
But anyway, we're not here to talk about what I think of Ad Astra. There's so much discourse going around on Twitter about Brad Pitt. Once again, he's this character actor that is trapped in a leading man's body. Like, oh, please. I am seeing all of Twitter, particularly Lady Twitter, may I say, fawning over this guy, like bringing up clips of him discussing other movies, bringing up the fact that he loved like Phantom Thread, which, by the way, Emmanuel, I know you did not like Phantom Thread, so I thought of you instantly.
Oof. It makes me want to poison myself with mushrooms.
Ooh, I don't even know what that is, but okay.
You know, and like pointing to his like great sensitivity. Guys, I'm fascinated by this collective amnesia around the return of Brad Pitt. Lest we forget, may I offer you a very handy reminder? Cast your mind back to 2016. I know you don't want to.
Okay, what was happening? But what was I wearing?
Exactly, that little old year.
That was a I think that was the year that we, that was after 2015,
lost
which
democracy?
We thought was like the worst year ever. And then,
So 2016, my outstanding memory of that year is sitting at my makeup table, getting ready to go into work and receiving a text message from Jamidra, which was a screenshot of her notification on her home screen that Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie had split up.
Oh, yeah.
And as a reminder, they split up amid allegations that there was a confrontation between Brad Pitt and their adopted son Maddox that got physical on their private plane.
Mm.
Okay, so I should note that Brad Pitt was officially cleared by the FBI, because apparently the FBI get involved when it's a private plane. So he's apparently been cleared. But isn't it interesting that we fast forward 3 years to 2019 and it's like nothing has happened? I've been fascinated by how little I've heard people talking about, oh, scandal hit Brad Pitt is now back. Isn't that unusual? I've seen that nowhere in the discourse. And I think that's so interesting. And I want to talk to you about how I think that happened.
Okay, well, tell me how you think Jennifer Aniston's ex-husband overcame his scandal.
I forgot the rule that we have to refer to them as that. Okay, unlike other ham-fisted, shall we say, shamed male celebrities, Brad Pitt, he's a very rich man. He's a very famous man. He's also been working in the movie industry for a very long time. We can actually confidently call him like old school Hollywood at this point. He's 55 years old. He's turning into the Robert Redford clone we always thought he would. And he has access to the very best PR, public relations, advice money can buy. And so clearly he was advised, lie very low, don't give too many interviews, don't talk, and then come back to great critical acclaim. And guys, that's exactly what he's done. And there is this invisible work of Hollywood. It's this string pulling that's done by publicists in the industry. And they make sure that you think and feel a certain way about certain people before you even know it's happening. It's a Jedi mind trick. It is fascinating. And it matters because A, it is so scarily effective. How quickly we've forgotten about why Brad Pitt split from his wife. Even in the age of social media, these tricks all work. And they actually work especially in the age of social media because social media can be used as a platform for putting those tricks out there. And one more thing, we've just had this huge reminder of what happens when people don't heed the old school approach. Can I say the name Shane Gillis to you guys?
Oh,
he's the guy who was cast on Saturday Night Live, along with Saturday Night Live's first ever Asian American comedian.
Oh, okay.
And then,
wait, hold on.
That guy.
Let's pull over and park. Saturday Night Live has never had an Asian comedian?
Apparently not.
Wow.
It then turns out that this guy, Shane Gillis, has a past of going on podcast episodes and saying some pretty racist things, specifically about, wait for it, Asian people.
Oh.
And so a lot of people find out about this. It's not digging up someone's past. This was a podcast from frighteningly recently that he said this stuff.
Like, you can't even use the evolve. I evolved.
No time to evolve. There was no time. Ludicrous. Anyway, this guy, Shane Gillis, doesn't back down, gives this totally crappy, ham-fisted apology where he doesn't really apologize at all. He's like, I push boundaries. How can I apologize for that? I mean, if you heard what he was saying, there was no boundary pushing there, by the way. Mm. They are jokes from the 1950s that have been reheated. So SNL fire him, and then he comes back again. All of this is via screenshots of his notes app on which he has written his public statements that he tweets. He's like, I remain defiant. Basically, it's not a big deal to me. Like, I said what I said. There is no remorse at all. And so if you compare and contrast these two case studies, Brad Pitt, he listens to the old school advice of old school Hollywood publicists.
Also known as common sense.
Indeed. And then you have this other guy who thinks, you know what? I can do this all myself. Sometimes you can't do this yourself.
Yeah. He should have called Olivia Pope, clearly.
Something that I find interesting is that Brad Pitt's approach was rely on the work because it'll speak for itself because it's actually good. Whereas Shane Gillis's work was, like you said, just kind of reheated old jokes that are racist from like 1950s. So he can't rely on the work. And he had a Twitter account. Brad Pitt doesn't. I think the lesson here is, well, the lesson here is don't be an a-hole. But also the lesson is, if you are an a-hole, don't have a Twitter account because you're going
to
make it worse.
When you think about celebrities like Beyonce, when a scandal happens, she doesn't even address it. She's like, I don't even have to talk about this. She
shuts right down.
She doesn't feel any pressure to answer to none of y'all. She's just like, I'm not, guess what? Another album. And Brad did the same thing. Yep. So when you're talented, you kind of don't need to explain. You kind of don't need to rely on sort of these weird Twitter press releases.
And it's that old rule of like, never apologize, never explain, which is going to lead me into rule number one of old school Hollywood publicists. It's going to be a really hard one for me and Jamidra and Emmanuel.
Okay.
The rule is don't talk.
Ooh,
do not talk. So there's this like pantheon, right, of old school Hollywood publicists. One of them is a woman called Pat Kingsley. If you Google this woman, she is an absolute legend in her field. She represented Tom Cruise for decades. A lot of publicists call themselves this old school term, which is press agent. Mm. She called herself a suppress agent.
Ooh.
She was known in Hollywood as Dr. No, because the whole thing about protecting stars, and we're talking like big movie star. She represented like the best of the best. The heart of that was controlling access to the stars. Mm. So don't go out there. Don't do this whole notes app thing. We decide what you say. And it does lead me to rule number two of the old fashioned publicist was, if you do talk, stick to the lines. Think how many cancellations of famous people are due to bad interviews or bad tweets. Control the access. If you don't let them say anything, they're not going to say anything dumb.
Mm-hmm.
So there's actually there's a great podcast I've discovered called Show Your Work with Duana Taha and Elaine Louie from Lady Gossip. It's so smart. And they had this great episode back in, I think, 2017 about how Brad Pitt was trying to mount his comeback so soon after the 2016 plane allegations. And they did this great dissection of his, do you remember his GQ interview where he was pictured in various couture crying in national parks? Okay.
What?
Picture the scene. He's in a sharp cut suit and he has tears in his eyes and he's been photographed at like the, you know, the blue hour in a national park.
Kind of brilliant.
Yes. Kinda so it's brilliant. All about like, see my vulnerability. And so on this podcast, Show Your Work, they dissect everything. They actually call it like algebraic, how much there's a formula that they are sticking to.
Build sympathy and empathy with your public. Yeah.
He hits all of these lines. They're so scripted. He talks about how he lights fires every morning and every evening in his house to bring life to the house. To bring life to the house. He talks about after the split, he was sleeping on a friend's floor for months. Come on, you're Brad Pitt. You have so much money.
Yes, yeah, we do.
And the best one was he actually likens himself to the entire country. He says, when I get in trouble, it's because of my hubris. When America gets in trouble, it's because of our hubris.
Yeah, I don't know if I would.
Bold move. But it's all meant to create this calculated illusion of vulnerability. And actually on this podcast, on another episode, they talk about how Madonna's image shifted from this like untouchable ballsy woman to being slightly tragic at this exact moment that she started going off script and second guessing herself and apologizing around the time that she made Evita. Because she was getting so much criticism for not being able to live up to this iconic musical theater role. She actually started apologizing and being insecure about it. No one wants to hear that.
Show Your Work. Well, I guess for our public figures or the people that we sort of like idolize, our idols, we like to think that they are sort of invincible or unimpeachable. Unimpeachable. And so when we hear them apologize, it kind of reveals a level of vulnerability for us. Then they're human and then it kind of takes away the mystique. I think that's what we like about like the old Hollywood celebrities. Mm-hmm. It was like this level of mystique. We kind of want them to feel outside of our reach or like at a distance.
Never apologize, never explain. Mm. And then you've got the old rule number three, deflect, do stunts, change the narrative, change the conversation. There are some tried and tested PR moves around here. The fact that you were hearing about Brad Pitt apparently defending Gwyneth Paltrow against Harvey Weinstein, that's not an accident.
That circulated. So Gwyneth Paltrow said this years ago, I think, if I'm not mistaken, on a podcast. And it's not new news, but it's being recirculated now around this time. He's the anti-Weinstein. At least that's sort of what the narrative is.
Yeah, there's this guy called Oliver Lansley who's actually created a TV show called Flack, which is all about PR. And this guy said, in a way, publicists are offering us alternate realities and we can choose the ones we like most. It's true.
Choose your own adventure.
Choose your own adventure. Which truth do you prefer? And the last one, rule number four, don't think you can do this on your own. If you want to be a big star, pay someone the big bucks. Look at what happens when the Shane Gillis guy tries to do it. Look at what happens when Lindsay Lohan tries to do her own PR. It's tragic.
So I've decided, Emmanuel Carly, I am packing up this afternoon. I'm going to Justin Trudeau. I'm moving to Canada. And I'm just going to be his PR. He needs these tips.
Needs it.
And I'm on board.
He needs it. But you know who should have listened to not being able to do his own PR? Tom Cruise. Because remember that Pat Kingsley woman I mentioned? She represented him for years. He was this iconic, like, sex symbol in people's mind. This untouchable action star. In 2004, he fired her and hired his sister.
Indeed. Is that when he went on Oprah?
That's when all of the couch jumping started. Oh, and that's when he went into, he's crazy, purgatory. And only recently has he been able to come out of that. And honestly, I don't think he'll ever recover with it. So guys, every time you're being sold something, listen, think, what am I being sold? There's a reason, and there's a puppet master behind the scenes making a lot of money from fashioning a version of someone that they want you to see. So don't fall for it. And don't fall for Brad Pitt. The end.
I don't know if y'all have heard or not, but the guy in the White House might actually suffer consequences for blamed crimes, allegedly. Mm-hmm. So I'll have you know that it's no coincidence that justice started raining down finally 2 days into Libra season, which is all about justice and like balance.
The scales.
So I'm taking credit for that one. You're welcome. My feelings on the impeachment proceedings can best be expressed through this clip of Tiffany New York Pollard from her time on Flavor of Love.
Bye, pumpkin.
So everyone knows what went down, no pun intended, with Clinton's impeachment. And if you're too young to remember or were just too busy listening to the thong song to care about politics at the time, I highly recommend listening to the Slow Burn podcast. It'll tell you everything you need to know. You will clutch your pearls with some of these details. But we're not here to talk about that today. We're here to talk about the other president who was impeached. Surprise civics pop quiz. Do y'all know who I'm talking about?
Andrew Jackson?
Bill Clinton?
We already talked about Clinton. Andrew Jackson is not it. Andrew Johnson.
It was an Andrew, I knew.
A lot of people think that Nixon was formally impeached, but he decided that things were heading that way, so he thought...
Exit stage left.
Yeah, he ran out of the fire exit.
Very, like, you can't fire me, I quit. Mm-hmm, now fetch me my helicopter type of thing.
You're not breaking up with me, I'm breaking up with you.
So the only president other than Clinton to be impeached was the 17th president of the United States, Andrew Johnson, who henceforth I will call AJ in honor of my second favorite Backstreet Boy, just because it's easier. So don't feel bad if you don't know her. Mariah doesn't know her. I barely know her. So I thought it would be useful, considering what the country's about to go through with our current POTUS, to break down exactly what happened to get this dude impeached. So after this segment, you can wow your friends with your presidential knowledge and maybe win some money on Jeopardy someday. Who knows?
Maybe.
So picture it. It's the 1860s. The Civil War is popping all the way off. The Southern states tell the Union, I'm outie. And the senators from those states stop showing up for work, except for Tennessee Senator AJ, who tells everyone, and I'm telling you, I'm not going. So that beautiful song caught the attention of then-president slash zaddy extraordinaire Abraham Lincoln, friend of a pod.
Yeah.
Friend
of the show.
So around the time of Lincoln's 1864 re-election campaign, the ashes of the Civil War were still hotter than a strawberry Pop-Tart fresh out of the toaster oven, and Lincoln wanted to bring the country back together. So he's like, let me pick this AJ guy as my new VP because he has that Southern cred, and he's a little bit racist, and that's relatable for a lot of these people.
Yeah, he's got that appeal.
Is he electable? Is he likable?
Is he racist? For
1860, yeah. Yes.
What could possibly go wrong? So they ended up winning the election because Lincoln had the range. Also, who wouldn't want to look at that tall drink of water for another 4 years? Like, sign me up. Yeah. I'm into it. And America was too at the time. So at the inauguration, Lincoln gives an iconic speech. I have no idea what he sounded like, but I'm going to try this anyway because I have no respect.
Oh, God.
Quoth he,
with malice toward none, with charity for all,
et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
People were obsessed.
I'm so turned on right now.
People were obsessed. Panties dropped. Some were probably hurled on stage. Citation needed, but I think it happened. So AJ, on the other hand, same day, same inauguration, didn't even get so much as a skid-marked pair of long johns thrown his way because he was apparently feeling sick earlier in the day and thought it would be a good idea to cure himself by chugging down the 19th century equivalent of multiple Long Island iced teas.
Oh.
So he shows up, he is wasted, and everyone knows what happens after you drink Long Island iced teas.
Yeah.
You end up slurring, you end up being randomly aggressive and ranting. His rant went something like this.
F you, you're cool, and you, I'm out.
He ended up being so drunk that he couldn't even perform his duty of swearing in the new senators, and everyone was aghast and scandalized, including a Michigan Republican senator by the name of Zachariah Chandler, who wrote home about the whole fiasco to his wife. He said, "I was never so mortified in my life. Had I been able to find a hole, I would have dropped through it out of sight."
Turned on again.
Some other person said, "This man is certainly deranged." So people were not here for him, but they were like, at least he's just the vice president. It's not that big of a deal. Fast forward 6 weeks, Lincoln is shot dead by John Wilkes Booth. And all of a sudden, the person who was not supposed to be in charge of repairing the country after the most divisive war of all time up until that point was in charge of Reconstruction. He didn't waste any time funking it up. A majority of Congress wanted to make up for the country's past sins by granting Black people citizenship and voting rights. Seems reasonable after hundreds of years of slavery. But AJ was like, what if we didn't?
How about no?
So he vetoed all these civil rights bills. A majority of Congress also wanted to put conditions on the southern states rejoining the Union. Like, they can't just get off scot-free. How about, like, Confederate leaders can't be leaders again as penance for a war that claimed 504 lives a day? But again, AJ was like, but they're my friends. So he gave them total amnesty and vetoed a bunch of other bills. And Congress at this point is really pissed off. Left to their own devices, the states in the South went back to their old ways, as expected. States enacted what were called Black Codes, which deprived freed people of their new civil liberties and indentured them to work on the very plantations of their former masters.
Oh, for God's
sake. As if nothing had happened.
Completely just rolled back the Reconstruction efforts.
Congress started getting concerned that AJ would replace Lincoln's cabinet members that weren't racist a-holes, so they passed a Tenure of Office Act, which banned AJ from firing anyone without their approval. Because he's a troll, AJ just wanted to do it more after that, so he waited until Congress was on vacation and randomly gets rid of Lincoln's Secretary of War, this guy named Edwin Stanton, who has the kind of beard where you're like, there's definitely crumbs in that. Like, he definitely gets soup in that way.
Snack for later, though. Oh,
disgusting.
Yeah, leftovers. Congress is like, what are you doing, AJ? We're going to put Stanton back in. That's illegal. And AJ's like, no, I'm just going to fire him again. At this point, Stanton is so sick of moving his stuff that he barricades himself in his office. And he's like, y'all figure this out. I'm staying. So as you might imagine, this is not a sustainable way to govern. So the House moved to impeach, eventually succeeding with a vote of 128-47. Not a good look, AJ. So AJ's like, let me go on tour and convince the citizens that I'm their man and that I'm amazing.
Where have we heard that before?
He goes out and meets these constituents, and he has this whole rant of like, Congress is trying to murder me. I'm not sure if he used the phrase witch hunt, but the gist was that.
Harassment?
And the people, right. Presidential harassment. So the people he met on this tour were not feeling it. They booed him. AJ booed back. Eventually, it's time for the Senate to have the trial. And it's not going well. Things aren't looking good because he's making matters worse out in the country. And by one vote, he squeaks by and is not ejected from office. He is impeached formally by the House, but not removed from office.
I think it's important for people to know that impeachment does not mean the person is going to be removed from office.
No.
Yeah.
Right. So it's re-election time, and his party's like, you know what, AJ, we don't see it for you. You're not even going to be our nominee. And so AJ has to go back to Tennessee with his racist tail between his legs, and historians now consider him one of the country's worst presidents of all time. So I'm curious, 150 years from now, if humans haven't gone extinct yet, obviously, there might be a segment on a podcast on Mars about our current impeachment pickle. And I'm really looking forward to finding out how it ends and also what Backstreet Boy nickname they use for Trump.
Well, also, I think medical science will have advanced to such a stage where you will still be alive and doing that segment, Emmanuel.
Your head will be in like in a liquid-filled glass.
Head in a jar.
Sort.
That's what I'm foreseeing.
Yes. Can't wait.
Oh, It's the peak in the pick. Hey, the peak in the pick. Hey.
It's time for our journey through the highs and the lows of recent pop culture events.
I have a delightful peak this week. And my peak is a bit of a revelation. I watch a lot of late night television, and typically during an election cycle or when there are sort of like really spicy political topics happening in the ether, I often see commercials promoting atheism.
Tell me more about this.
Yeah, it's a thing. And so one of my favorite commercials has a really catchy tagline. And so have you ever been up late night and heard this?
Hi, I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. Please support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
I have never heard that.
This is Ronald Reagan's son.
Oh, wow.
Former president of the United States, the man who famously once said, if we ever forget that we are one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under.
Whoa. How embarrassing for Papa Reagan.
Yeah, but not just that. When I say that Ron Reagan couldn't have rolled farther from the tree, he declared himself an atheist super young. I mean, he was a child when he told his parents that he wasn't about that life. He was like, I don't believe. And from that moment on, he has been a complete departure from his father. So he went to Yale. You know, that's what you do when you're in a prominent family. You go to a prominent school. He decided to drop out to become a, can you guess?
Teacher?
What about you, Emmanuel?
A television personality? MTV VJ.
Close. That was later in life. First, he decided to become a ballet dancer.
A good, solid career with real long-term prospects.
But you were close, Emmanuel, because he did go on to be sort of like a noted liberal commentator. So he's been a commentator on MSNBC. He had he was a political analyst on KIRO radio. He has not been a fan of some of the Republican candidates and presidents. He's accused George W. Bush of hijacking his father's legacy. Like, he's an outspoken liberal figure. He even had a late night show for a little bit, but it was canceled because it couldn't compete with the Arsenio Hall show and the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, so it didn't last long. However, he is a bit of a personality in your across the pond in your neck of the woods, Carly.
Of course. We'll take anyone.
He's hosted a show called Record Breakers, and it's based on the Guinness Book of World Records.
Record Breakers, I know Record Breakers.
Yeah.
That's the guy from Record Breakers. Wow.
So anyway, as we talk about everything that's happening in politics right now, as we head into stressful election season in 2020. It just really tickled me to know that Ronald Reagan, who is sort of like the epitome of conservative values, dare I say Christian values in this country, that his son would be so vastly different from him. And it's just a reminder that we don't have to be our parents.
Incredible. Tiffany Trump, it's not too late.
It is.
It really is. Okay, so since you kept it happy, I'm taking it all the way down to the sad pit. Guys, the Joker movie. I'm sick of it already.
Really?
And it hasn't even really hit a screen near me. Unbelievable. You guys know about this movie?
I have seen commercials because someone decided it was a good idea to insert one of those during children's programming. So me and my children have seen the promo for this film, yes.
Ugh, Emmanuel, how do you feel about it?
I feel like we've already heard this story, and I think it might be giving ammo to the wrong type of people who don't need to feel understood right now.
I mean, and in this case, quite literally ammunition. I mean, guys, we have enough award-winning incels. For anyone who's been living under a rock, this Joker movie is a gritty evaluation of the origin story of the Joker, looking at his roots as an angry young man who was shunned by society, blah, 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 and then he becomes this psychotic figure. I mean, we have enough of that in real life. I mean, the name Elliot Rodgers is jumping to my mind. Yeah. Do we need to see this again, and do we need to have a whole legion of unhappy young men inspired by this? I would argue not. And what really grinds my gears is the way that there is no nuance in the conversation around it from the filmmaker himself, this guy called Todd Phillips. When he was asked about people seeing the movie in this way and being concerned that it kind of glorifies incel violence, he was like, well, John Wick came out, and John Wick is a white guy who shoots like 300 people in John Wick 3. So why isn't everyone criticizing John Wick? Whoa. Sir, please.
To quote Greta, the climate change activist, How dare you?
How dare you? But if I'm not mistaken, I feel like there was an official warning issued recently about this film.
I think it's only going to get worse, not to sound too apocalyptic, but, you know, like self-fulfilling prophecy and all that.
I mean, like from a government agency. I can't remember which one, but they actually warned against violence or possible violence at theaters, and they sort of like referenced Aurora, Colorado. Like, there's really legitimate fear around this particular film.
I know. And also to cast Robert De Niro in it, who, let's be honest, played the incel character in Taxi Driver. I mean, they know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. Wow, so that really is a pit.
Mm-hmm.
You delivered.
I did. I said what I was said.
We might need a little bit of Xanax after that. And that is the topic of the song of the week. Some months ago, we spent an entire segment scratching our heads over why Lindsay Lohan would think it was a good idea to try to kidnap children on Instagram Live.
Oh, I do remember
allegedly.
This.
Yeah. Since then, it seems like Lindsay has decided to stop trying to snatch other people's children and focus her energy onto something more productive, which is making music that only certain gays will actually listen to.
Hey!
And it is widely known that if you want to start a fight, go into a gay bar and say that Rumors by Lindsay Lohan isn't a bop, you will be lucky to make it out alive. Just saying. So 11 years after her last music release, Lindsay Lohan is making her return to pop with a song called Xanax.
No.
The track tackles social anxiety. It's actually the chorus. Social anxiety. Believe it. It also tackles agoraphobia that you experience in a crowded club at 4 a.m. where you cannot find love, turns out, according to this song. Usually I pick outro songs based on like how much I've been listening to them and that I actually love them. I don't love this song, but I feel like everyone should know it exists just to be aware. And also to be aware that she is sampling the perfect 90s banger, Better Off Alone by Alice DJ.
Wow.
So that's a lot. We're going to ride out on this ill-advised, kind of catchy prescription drug anthem.
Wow.
Ill-advised and kind of catchy. Put that on my tombstone. Thanks, as always, to podcast papa David Marcus.
Eternal gratitude to Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs for all original music you heard in this episode. Also, shout out to the Radio Art Studio in New York City for making our long-distance relationship possible. If you want to be featured on our hotline segment in future episodes, make our hotline bling by giving us a call at 415-553-2850. Until next month, you can find us on social media. Carly's at Teacup in the Bay.
Emmanuel is at Excuse My Beauty with no E on Twitter and with the E on Instagram.
And I can promote myself. So I'm at Jamidra Says on all platforms. Holla.
Have a good October, everyone. Bye.
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 Bye.